Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge the season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to Breaking Points with Crystal and Sagar. We're going to be totally upfront with you. We took a big risk going independent. To make this work, we need your support to beat the corporate media. CNN, Fox, MSNBC, they are ripping this country apart. They are making millions of dollars doing it. To help support our mission of making all of us hate each other less, hate the corrupt ruling class more, support the show. Become a Breaking Points premium member today, where you get to watch and listen to the entire show ad-free and uncut an hour early before everyone else. You get to hear our reactions to each other's monologues. You get to participate in weekly Ask Me Anythings. And you don't need to hear our annoying voices pitching you like I am right now. So what are you waiting for? Go to BreakingPoints.com, become a premium member today, which is available in the show notes. Enjoy the show, guys.
As our regular scheduled Daily Poster segment this week, we have a little bit of a special one because David Sirota, who we can put up on the screen, he joins us now to talk about his movie, Don't Look Up, which has gotten incredible reviews. You guys know has a ridiculous cast. We can put the tear sheet up on the screen here of the write-up over at the Daily Poster. Got a quote there that says, "Don't Look Up is here. This is the most prominent climate change movie, and it has the best cast ever assembled around this topic." That's not even opinion. That's just literal fact. David, welcome and congrats on the movie.
Congrats, David.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Yeah. I know it comes out today, so people can go and watch it on Netflix, which both of us are
planning
to do.
On watching it.
So just give us like a little bit of the rundown for people who don't know of the plot and how this all came together.
Sure. About 3 years ago, I was talking to my friend Adam McKay, who is the director of famous comedies like Anchorman, Step Brothers, also director of Big Short and Vice. And we were talking and I said to him, "Listen, man, you got to use your superpowers of comedy to do something about on the climate crisis." And he said, "Yeah, you know, I know, but I don't want to do something that's kind of Mad Max post-apocalyptic." And so we were spitballing ideas and going back and forth about different kinds of ideas. And at one point, I was lamenting the lack of media coverage, serious media coverage about the climate crisis. And I said, "You know, man, it feels like it's like an asteroid headed towards Earth and no one cares." And he said, "Wait a minute. Maybe that's the movie." And so we got to spitballing different ideas. And he then went to work on a script. And he kept saying, "You know, I got the script," and I gave him notes on the script. And he said, I think we're going to make this." And, "Oh, hey, I think we got Leonardo DiCaprio interested and Jennifer Lawrence interested." And I kept saying, "Yeah, okay, sure." Right. I didn't kind of believe that this would happen. And then all of a sudden he said, no, "Listen, we're sending over the papers. You got to sign them because this is happening right now." And
Wow. Now
here we are, a movie about this that's going to be available to tens of millions of people on Christmas Eve. on Netflix. And look, the idea of the movie is basically to try to address the climate crisis or to raise questions about it. It's hard to do it specifically on the nose with the climate crisis. It might be a better idea or a good idea to do an allegory. And the allegory is a comet is headed towards Earth, and two scientists are on a media tour, essentially, to try to warn the world and to try to prompt the government to act in defense of the planet and to do what is possible to do. And so this is their trials and travails, trying to warn the world in a media and political system that no longer really constructively processes basic scientific facts.
Wow. You know, David, I read Ben Smith's column in the New York Times, which talked a bit about the movie and how it was a media critique. I think, can you zoom in on that element
too?
How you, because I assume you played a big role in exposing the media there. Talk to us about that part.
Sure. I mean, that is a central part of this movie, which is can our corporate media in the United States, is it able to even process facts that are uncomfortable, that are terrifying, or is our media constantly trying to frivolize and distract from the things that we need to be talking about? And you'll see scenes in this movie that will be very familiar to you. I mean, there's a central talk show that I don't want to give it away, but I think if you look at Tyler Perry and Cate Blanchett, you'll get the idea of which talk show in corporate media that it kind of takes its inspiration from. And there are scenes where the scientists are on this show trying to warn the world about this. And the hosts and the show are constantly trying to look away, to distract, to make it happy news, to make it fun news. And at one point, one of the characters says, you know, maybe the end of the world isn't supposed to be fun. Maybe that's not supposed to be a happy news story, but we still have to focus in on it. And that's where this movie, it's a hilarious movie. I think people are going to be laughing most of the way through, but there's an underlying point here. And by the way, it goes beyond just climate change, right? I mean, when this movie was being made, it was a climate allegory, but then the pandemic came up and there's been all sorts of rejection of basic science when it comes to that. And I think what it's really about is, can we as a society anymore, when we have uncomfortable facts that we need to deal with, immovable facts, crises that are bearing down on us that cannot be negotiated with, can we even process them? Or do those facts become weapons in a culture war, a media war, partisan war? And that's what's really scary, because we know we have all sorts of crises that we face, and we actually know we can fix a lot of them, or at least address a lot of them. But so often the solutions become the cannon fodder in all of these different culture and media wars, rather than things that we can stipulate and act on in a constructive way.
Well, when news is just infotainment and people are just watching it to sort of, you know, the whole project is just to titillate people, rather than really to inform and educate, you can understand why people don't really take it seriously anymore. You know, so that even if the news anchor is like, no, guys, this is really serious, it's like, yeah, but you've been doing this like breaking news alerts and, you know, sort of catastrophic theater for a long time about a bunch of stuff that didn't end up being a big deal. So when something that comes along that is a big deal and you've been, you know, trying to generate this churn of the 24-hour news cycle for so many years, I think that's the other part, is as a society, we have a little bit of a boy who cried wolf phenomenon going on as well.
I totally agree. And on top of that, there's a lack of faith in institutions. And that undergirds this movie in a lot of ways. I mean, you'll see there are comet deniers in this movie, like climate deniers. And I think part of that comes from the fact that we know we live in a society where there's a lack of faith in our government, both rightfully and in my view, wrongly. Rightly in the sense that, look, we have lived through, this generation has lived through so many moments where the government has delegitimized itself, from the Iraq war lies to the failure to deal with the financial crisis to some of the things that have happened in the pandemic. We live in a society where you can see the government's obvious failures right in your face. At the same time, there's a political movement that has tried to constantly delegitimize the government, even when it's done obviously decent and good things. So that lack of faith in institutions means that even the most obvious facts of all, like let's say a comet headed towards Earth, that if you look up in the sky and you can see, there are now going to be people who won't believe that if the government says that's happening, because the government has been so delegitimized. By the way, the media has been so delegitimized. Yeah. A lot of people not wanting to believe what the media says. And that is, you know, I'm not saying part of that isn't correct and based in reality, but where does it leave us when we need to actually face up to basics?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think part of the problem is, I'm thinking this through in real time, a lot of the catastrophizing the media does is about stuff that actually isn't like things that you should be panicked about or is invented. I mean, like the, you know, like Antifa's coming to your town to like destroy your neighborhood or whatever. Like there was a whole panic around that and they're trying to change your whole way of life. There's that. There's on the left, there's, you know, like Trump and the P tape and that whole thing. And then the things that were real problems and real disasters, like the wars and like the financial crisis, they didn't predict it. They didn't challenge it. They didn't, you know, expose it. They didn't catastrophize and properly educate and warn people about the things that truly did end up being complete and utter disasters. So, yeah, when you look at that, that's going to erode trust in media. That track record is going to erode trust in media.
And of course, in a lot of those things, the media was complicit. I mean, the media wasn't just not covering it. The media was part of it. And look, we see that today. I mean, look, how many corporate media outlets do you watch where they barely ever talk about climate change? And many of them are sponsored by the oil industry, the fossil fuel industry that is creating the problem. So when scientists are trying to say, hey, this is an enormous problem happening right now, it's not a forum that's all that interested in covering those issues. Now, there's one other theme in this movie that I think is worth mentioning on as we discuss this, which is the idea of technology. There's a theme in this movie where you'll see that there's this idea that we don't have to change our society. We don't have to really mobilize much of anything because technology will save us. And I think that's a very reassuring message to a lot of people in our current media and political landscape. Hey, climate change, for instance, doesn't mean we have to really change much of anything. Somebody somewhere, some tech genius is going to figure out how to solve this. So we don't really have to do much of anything to change our culture, to change our society. And without giving anything away, you'll see in the movie kind of indicts that whole idea, this idea that technological triumphalism will save us without us having to do much of anything. And the movie kind of pokes fun at that in a very dark way.
David, what's this been like for you personally?
Oh, man, it's been surreal, frankly. I mean, to see an idea that we spitballed, you know, 2-3 years ago, now going out on a platform where tens, if not potentially hundreds of millions of people can see this movie with all of these celebrities, these amazing actors in this movie. I mean, it's really hard to believe it happened. And I want to say one last thing about that. This movie is filled with it's like the most incredible cast you could possibly imagine. And I want to express some real gratitude to these stars for actually being willing to be in a controversial, politically risky film that raises these deep questions, that they are using their platforms to try to sound a huge alarm. Now, I'm not saying they're martyrs or anything like that, but I am saying it is relatively rare for people with real cultural cachet, people with real star power, to actually risk using that star power, risk using that celebrity to do something serious. So I feel great gratitude to that cast and great gratitude, of course, to Adam McKay, who among the most prominent example, used his platform, is putting his career essentially on the line to actually try to deliver these really important messages.
Yeah. Wow.
Congrats, David. We can't wait to watch it. I urge people to check it out. The, you know, reviews have been really, I think a lot of people in our audience will find it really thought-provoking and it will land.
To watch it, man.
Thank you. So congrats and happy holidays. Happy New Year, my friend.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Soon. And thank you guys for watching. We'll have more for you later.
Never let it be said that we don't keep an eye over on Fox News for some bonkers stuff in order to show you. This one particularly caught my eye. Jesse Kelly, a conservative commentator appearing on Tucker Carlson's show, to describe some of his problems with the U.S. military. Let's take a listen.
Well, what we're watching is the destruction of the U.S. military. And what we're going to end up seeing, Tucker, is thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of Americans die. Those are the stakes right. of the game we're playing here. We don't need a military that's woman friendly. We don't need a military that's gay friendly, with all due respect to the Air Force. We need a military that's flat out hostile. We need a military full of type A men who want to sit on a throne of Chinese skulls. But we don't have that now. We can't even get women off of naval vessels. That should be step one. But most of them are already pregnant anyway.
Throne of Chinese skulls. That's, look, I mean, I've been accused of being some warmonger or whatever. That's what it actually looks like, just by the way. Speaking this way is A, incredibly irresponsible. I probably even agree with Jesse that wokeness in the U.S. military is a huge problem, and that social justice and all this stuff at the expense of a warfighting force that is actually capable of winning a war is actually terrible, detrimental, and more. But speaking this way shows a real bloodthirst, which I personally find disgusting. Nobody should wish war upon anyone, because, by the way, to construct a throne of Chinese skulls would also require a lot of American skulls, too, as you can see in any conflict where the U.S. has ever been engaged in. I don't think anybody should be pushing this type of rhetoric. And actually, in my opinion, it only makes social justice and stuff more likely by behaving like such an idiot on national television that they can point to and say, see, these are the people who are opposing this. So there's a lot to be said around that, and I actually do think it is important to be very responsible in terms of speaking around the way that we should have a military, to what purpose, and more. So look, I know Jesse himself served, so like I guess he has a right to say whatever he wants, maybe even more so than me. But I found this personally a very gross segment.
Thirsting for Chinese
skulls. I think it's very, like, very disgusting.
Not only blood, right. I mean, that's like outright genocidal. Mm-hmm. It's disgusting to want. And to your point, listen, even if you don't give a shit about the Chinese citizens who would suffer and die in that conflict, which you 1,000,000% should, how many of our soldiers died in the unnecessary wars in the Middle East? How many of them were injured? How many of their lives were turned upside down?
Yeah.
How many are struggling with suicide and depression because of the things that they had to do, the things that they saw, the things that they had to, you know, experience? So this casual desire for war with China, it really is a kind of mask off moment. One of the things that I hate the most about the current right, one of them is, just the total fealty to Trump. And the only litmus test that really matters is how absurd you're willing to debase yourself around Stop the Steal. The other one is how they just throw out the term woke with regards to absolutely everything without justifying it. Like, listen, I am, considered anti-woke. I think the fact that oftentimes these sort of like identitarian, hollow identity politics are used to be like, isn't the CIA amazing? Or isn't the military industrial complex amazing? Like, effectively the meme of the plane dropping bombs, like, but you put the rainbow flag on it, like, and a woman's a pilot, that's great. So I have my issues with wokeness and especially the sort of off-putting academic language that is really counterproductive to actually building some sort of multiracial working class progressive project. But it gets thrown around as an excuse for absolutely everything, again, with no justification. So like they said that the Build Back Better bill, their problem with it was woke. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? I mean, and it doesn't even have to be analyzed or, laid out the arguments that they make. So it also irritates me, this whole, like, there are a lot of critiques you can make of the military. And if there is a specific social justice thing that you think is distracting, they're like, dig into that. That's fine. We can have that conversation. But it's just thrown around in such a blanket way as to become utterly meaningless.
Yeah, no, that's actually also a good point. It is meaningless. If this is what the modern right is, count me out. Count me out, brothers.
You're not down for the throne of Chinese skulls.
I just want us actually to live in, general peace, also maintain some of our prosperity and integrity here at home. That's a whole other conversation. You know, this type of stuff doesn't help anybody. And I do think it's important, because if that is the type of stuff that gets mainstreamed to a lot of people, not good.
Yeah.
That's what justified the war on terror for a long time, which I would remind Jesse and a lot of other people on the right, the rhetoric spins around real quick, doesn't it? Whenever it starts to get targeted on you post January 6th. So, try and at least speak from a point of principle and make it so that in the future, this type of stuff won't come against you because, you know, 2005, it was real easy to go on and beat your chest about jihad. And now what? Right?
Yeah.
It's all been turned against you.
That's a very good point. Right. Very good point. Okay. All right, guys. Thanks for watching. We'll have more for you later.
One of my favorite comedians, Bill Burr. I love whenever he sounds off on the mainstream media. He had a previous great bit about how his mother-in-law was home and he was forced to watch CNN on his previous podcast. Recently appeared on the Pat McAfee show discussing both CNN and Fox viewers. As always, we got to tune into what Bill has to say. Let's take a listen.
Do you stay isolated from the world somehow?
Absolutely. I don't watch the news. Somebody did a joke about the vice president. I think about the president, and I didn't get it. I had to think about it. And that kind of scared me. And I was like, all right, I got to pay
tap
at least
in a
pay
bit.
A little bit. Yeah. No, but people who watch CNN and Fox all day are fucking insane people. Because all their those two channels, their job is just to scare you and divide America. That's all they do, and just sit there blame. They sound like divorcees, you know what I mean? Just blaming their spouse, you know, talking shit about them. So I don't know. I stay away from, like, I can't watch either one of those news channels without getting infuriated. Just the fact that they act like they're news.
What is Bill Burr? Because you don't do the online, obviously. You don't dive in there. You don't really dive into semantics much. It feels like you live though, because you have so much to talk about all the time.
Right.
How do you keep yourself isolated? Like, do you really just turn everything off and say, see ya, fuck everybody?
Yeah.
How? Is it not difficult right now?
No, it's fun. It's fun. It just chills you out. You just turn it off and it's just fun. And then you run into people, you know, who are watching all of this stuff, and they show up, their eyebrows are up. And it's like, oh yeah, that's why I stopped watching. Okay.
Very relatable.
I love Bill so much. If there is any message of the holiday season, that's what it is. Turn this shit off. It is not good for you. Getting all hyped up about this or that, you know, just as Bill says, literally, it's the divorcees is like the perfect thing. Have you seen the thing they did today? I mean, oh my God, this. Same thing happens on their side, conveniently, just, you know, absolutely silence, you know, on the other side as well. So I think he very much, he's, you know, somebody who just sits in the middle, and I think represents a vast swath of our audience of people who are fed up with everybody. So anytime I see these in pop culture kind of bubble up, I mean, he's a very famous man. He was on Star Wars, all of that. Also one of the most irreverent comedians who has somehow survived the cancel culture era. I think this is a great message. I wanted to get out there.
He makes a couple of actually really important points. Number one, he makes the Matt Taibbi point that all these networks are about is making us hate each other.
Yeah.
Like, that's their whole purpose.
Right.
And he puts his own spin on it of the divorcee thing, which is hilarious. Yes. The moral of every story on CNN is they're bad. Yeah. And the moral of every story in Fox News is no, you're bad. Right. So the other important point is, like, just don't listen. You're actually better off being completely uninformed.
I agree.
Than you are tuning in to CNN or Fox News or MSNBC. They make you dumber. They poison your brain. They make you hate the people and fear the people around you. And ultimately, you will be happier and you will actually be smarter and better informed if you don't, like, take in what is effectively like candy and cigarettes from, you know, the news equivalent of candy and cigarettes from MSNBC, CNN, and Fox. I do think it's great. It's important to be informed. The world we live in is changing rapidly. Understanding those cultural forces, understanding what it means for your life. Ideally, you'll have some kind of a news diet that is actually nutritious, well thought out, and provides you some actual information and sustenance to help you understand the trends that are going on around you and how they're ultimately going to impact you. CNN and Fox are the polar opposite of that.
I know.
They will actually make you dumber. So those two points, you know, he says them sort of casually and they're funny. They are actually really, really important points. And of course, we would love for people to watch Breaking Points.
Yeah, watch Breaking Points
instead. Actual information instead of the infotainment.
That, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's just like, the more I see these types of figures in pop culture speak out, the more that you just see the embrace, and because people feel afraid, you know, I've seen this in the past. People, sometimes I'll tell people, like, you don't know who we are. And they're like, oh, what do you do? I'm like, oh, I work in, you know, the news, media, whatever. And they're like, oh, and sometimes they feel ashamed. They're like, I don't watch the news. And I'm like, no, that's good.
Yeah.
It's like, it's good for you. Yeah. Like, I'm like, it's okay. I don't blame you. It's bad. And they're like, yeah, man, you know, my uncle watches the news and he feels like the Democrats are going to, or the same thing. Like, my grandma's, you know, can't sleep at night because she thinks that Trump is a Russian agent. And I'm like, no, you're actually way better off. So let's popularize this message. Get it to everybody else out there. Just turn this shit off. You're going to be a lot better
off.
Take
cable news out of your diet. Yeah. You will be happier.
Cancel
it. And you will be smarter and better informed too.
100%.
All right, guys. Thanks for watching. We'll have more for you later.
We've tracked a lot here how just involved the feds were in the alleged kidnapping plot around Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. You'll remember that dropped right before the election. It was a significant media story. And subsequent reporting from BuzzFeed News and others has revealed that it was almost entirely a government creation in the recruitment, in the amount of agents who were more involved than actual perpetrators. And many of the people who were on the federal side were quite sketchy. And the more that we learn about it, the more clownish it becomes. Let's put this up there on the screen. The FBI investigation into the alleged plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer has gotten very complicated. And what they point to in that complication are informants and agents within the case who have been engaged in behavior which is now criminal. And what we mean by that is this, and we'll start with the informant themselves, which is that one of the informants who was crucial to the investigation was indicted on a gun charge and is now under investigation for fraud.
Cool.
The documents reveal repeated instances of lawbreaking by Stephen Robison, who, while working for the government, identified and recruited potential targets in multiple states who organized many of the events where prosecutors say that the alleged kidnapping plan was hatched. Now, those crimes actually took place right under the nose of his FBI handlers. But even more so is that the handlers themselves, Jason Chambers, this is a person who was working for the FBI, his role within the case had not been previously as well known. Well, it turns out that while he was doing that, he was attempting to parlay his FBI work hunting for terrorists into a private money-making venture, which is a company that sought contracts in some cases worth millions of dollars to help institutions identify different public threats, and he's now then under investigation by the Justice Department and the FBI for engaging with
Amazing.
This. I mean, how much more do we need to learn here about the people involved in this case? It's crazy.
It really is crazy. So you have that dude mm-hmm. who's trying to cash in on right, his FBI yeah, on work, his- and who they document here was kind of like, it looked like in a Twitter account he was mm-hmm. affiliated with, dropping little hints, dropping non-public information about, oh, just wait. Almost like the, you know, your time in the barrel is coming. Right. It was sort of like that
with TikTok
regard to Michigan. Yeah, it was that kind of stuff. So you've got that guy. You've got another FBI agent who we covered before, who was the case's public face. Like, this guy was someone who they were leaning heavily on to testify and be sort of a linchpin of this prosecution. Oh, well, he was charged with beating his wife when they returned home from a swingers party. So that guy's out. He was fired soon thereafter. Another agent was accused of perjury. Okay, it's another one. You had a state prosecutor in a related case who was reassigned and then retired in the face of an audit into his prior use of informants. And then you have the informant you just mentioned, yes. whose work was crucial to the investigation, indicted on a gun charge and under investigation for fraud. So I think this whole thing is extremely revealing
yes.
of many things. First of all, and I really want you guys to take this in, if you're on the right side of the political spectrum, these are the tactics that were pioneered under the war against terrorism.
Oh, yes.
This is what was used routinely against young, disaffected Muslim men, predominantly, in order to, in some cases, radicalize people who weren't even radicals at the time, mm-hmm. to then encourage them to come up with these plots, to then, you know, do whatever they could to effectively entrap them. I mean, listen, the courts didn't rule that these things were entrapment, but I think anybody who looks dispassionately at the details and how involved the government was in this plot, in some of these plots, would see there would not have been a plot if it was not for the government encouraging and providing them resources and support to help concoct these plots. So those tactics are pioneered under the War on Terror, and now they're, you know, continuing to be used, and in this instance, against these individuals. And no one is saying that these dudes who were open to the idea of, like, kidnapping and murdering Gretchen Whitmer are good people, mm-hmm. right? That's part of what makes this complicated. It's part of what made, you know, someone who's even open to the idea of bombing Herald Square. That's not a sympathetic figure. But these tactics are extraordinarily abusive, and bottom line, they are not making you more safe. They are generating more crime. They're putting money into the pockets of scumbags. We covered also how the FBI has authorized tens of thousands of crimes to be committed.
Of horrific crimes.
Under their purview.
Right.
So it really does call into question this whole idea of what is actually keeping us safe. What these sorts of major high-profile prosecutions and busts ultimately do is they bolster a lot of careers.
Yeah, exactly.
Law enforcement officials and of politicians. So that's why I don't care where you are in the political spectrum, you should be very, very leery and upset about these type of tactics being used, even if it's against people that you think are gross and that you totally hate. It really doesn't matter. It is absolutely abusive.
Yeah, that's something I've really had to learn. And now anytime I see any one of these stories, like big feds reveal plot, I'm like, yeah, skeptical. Hold on a second. Mm-hmm. Let me see the indictment. Let me see the underlying facts. And even then, I still don't believe you. And I'm probably not going to believe you unless I see a whole lot more of discovery. That's something the deep, I cannot tell you how much skepticism has come over the last couple of years, and I would just encourage you all to incorporate in your daily lives. I don't think you can trust them for a second. I really don't.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching. We'll have more for you later.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances. Whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities, or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.